You're listening to the voice of the private sector. Welcome to Brian Bushlack's Business Briefing, presented by Delta Airlines. You can't stop Seattle. And by MassMutual Financial Group, protecting business owners and executives across the Puget Sound region. Now, from the studios in Seattle, here's Brian Bushlack.
And we open up December with the focus on real estate. We'll talk commercial real estate, specifically the red-hot apartment market across Portland. Coming up in about 15 minutes with Joseph Chaplick from Joseph Bernard Investment Real Estate. And a little bit later, stay with us as we go behind the scenes at Expedia with one of the best PR people in the business. She's an Oregon native, Sarah Gavin. First, though, let's talk about the economy and the residential real estate market with our expert, Patrick Stone. He's the founder, chairman, and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. Of course, as you know, living here, the Seattle market and Portland market continue to be the hottest in the country.
Absolutely, Brian. And I got to tell you, it's going to continue. Demand exceeds supply as it has for the last few years. And actually, starting about early 2015, the rate of acceleration in home prices in Seattle and Portland started outpacing the national average at a very significant level. And there's been some interesting statistics published lately. One of them, there's a list of what is called severely unaffordable locations. The number one is San Jose, California. Number two is Honolulu. Number three is L.A. Portland ranks number nine, and Seattle ranks number 10. And the severely unaffordable designation is based on taking median price in a market and dividing it by median income. And to give you an example, Portland median price right now is $358,500. Median income is $65,200. So Portland has a 5.5 multiple. Seattle is also at 5.5 with a median average price of $422,100 and a median average income of $76,900. So both of them have a 5.5 designation, ranked 9th and 10th. I'll give you some relativity there. San Jose is at 9.8 with a median average price of about $1 million and a median average income of about $105,000. So we are significantly priced. Seattle's about 32% above the peak in 2008. Portland's about 29% above the peak in 2008. People ask frequently, well, does this represent a bubble? I do not think it's a bubble in the sense that the price appreciation has been parallel to employment gains. So it's been driven by demand. It's not been driven by easy money, nor has it been driven by excess speculation in second homes or investment homes. So we are seeing a demand-driven market. We are also seeing a slowing down of the appreciation. If you look over the last 12 months, each month's year-over-year appreciation number is slightly lower than the preceding month, which means we're starting to top out. And I think within a year, appreciation levels in both Seattle and Portland will be mirroring the national average, no longer exceeding it. And I think we'll stay there until we build more homes.
I'll never forget, we had breakfast a couple of years ago, and I said, Pat, how much longer is this going to continue? I mean, there's going to have to be a reset. And you looked at me and said, it's going to keep on going. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, I think it's going to go on for a long time. You know, you look at the construction, what's going on in the country, and we look at all new homes that are built in the country. It's still roughly 30% of the homes are under 250,000, and we're only building four new homes per 1,000 people over 25 years of age. So new construction is still not fulfilling the demand. Both Seattle and Portland have geographical limitations on construction. So it's going to be a fact of life. I shouldn't say it's a problem. It's a problem in the sense that there's not enough inventory, and it's a problem in the sense that demand exceeds supply. It is not a problem in the sense yet that it is a bubble type environment.
Chairman and CEO of WFG National Title, Pat Stone, joining us. Let's talk about the tax bill. There's been a lot of headlines about this, and I know some concern for homeowners, home buyers, the real estate markets. What's the latest here?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a little concerned too, Brian, and I think one, and this is kind of ironic, but I personally am very concerned about adding a $1.5 trillion of debt to the national deficit over the next 10 years. Our national debt has gone up significantly in the last 10 years. We do not need to add additional debt. And one of the things that I had hoped would happen with a Republican Senate, House of Representatives and presidency, we would have a real focus on maintaining, making sure that any tax bill would be revenue neutral. This tax bill would create $1.5 trillion worth of additional debt. I personally, and this is a personal opinion, don't think it's necessary to do it the way they're doing it. I think it also has a potential negative impact on real estate. A couple of interesting things just to point out. There is very little consensus among economists that a tax cut has a positive economic benefit. And one of the arguments that's being made here is that by cutting taxes, cutting corporate taxes, we're going to stimulate growth. I would refer to two, I think, fairly interesting studies that have been done in this area. One is done by the Congressional Budget Office in 2015, ranking the different things that create economic growth done by the government. The least impactful of anything the government could do, and anything being everything from unemployment through infrastructure through tax cuts, the least impactful is a corporate tax cut. So that's exactly what we're doing here. And then Moody Analytics did a study about 5 years ago on the impact of each dollar spent by the government, and they had the same consensus. The number one thing was unemployment. Each dollar spent by the government is $1.61 with an economic impact. Number two was infrastructure, $1.54. Last was a tax cut. Every dollar cut in taxes creates 70 cents worth of economic activity. So I have a problem, I think, with the basic premise. I also have a problem with the impact on real estate, and I'll just give you just a short overview of what this will do as is currently conceived. The idea is to limit mortgage interest deductions to a $500,000 cap for new buyers, meaning currently if you can deduct mortgage interest up to $1 million. Now, it's been limited to new buyers, meaning that if you're in a home and you have $1 million mortgage, you can still deduct interest on that $1 million. But if you buy a new home, it's limited to $500,000. It extends the time for capital gains from 2 years to 5 years, makes high property taxes less attractive, a $10,000 cap on deductibility of property tax, eliminates the deduction for moving expenses, and no deduction or interest for second home mortgages. It's really kind of fascinating to look at how this lines up. One of the ideas both in the House and Senate tax bill is that state and local taxes deductions will be limited or eliminated, and high income mortgage interest deductions will be eliminated. So if you look at all the states and you line the states up based on the percentage of filings that include tax deductions, it turns out that the bulk of the states that where you have high levels of itemized deductions are blue states, are Democratic states. So the burden of this will fall on principally Democratic states. So I think there's a little political motivation behind it, perhaps. I do not like it. I don't think the tax bill is well thought out. Yes, our corporate tax rates are high, but U.S. corporations are making more money than they've ever made before because there's a lot of deductions that are involved, and the tax rate that's stated frequently is not actually what is being paid. So we need to adjust taxes. We need to make them more simple, but we need to have consensus. We need to have hearings. We need to have both parties working towards a tax bill that really benefits all the American people.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it sounds like the big picture, though, 1031 was a concern. It sounds like that won't be included. I guess 1031 of aircraft and yachts and art, things like that's what they're talking about, right? Like that impacts the 1%, right? So the 1031, it sounds like we'll be okay.
Yeah. You know, the tax bill is, it, by all appearances, will significantly benefit upper-income people more than modest-income people, which, again, I think is somewhat unfortunate.
Up next, we'll talk to Patrick Stone about interest rates. Should we be concerned about rate hikes in the year ahead? That's up next as Business Briefing continues across the region.